Good evening and welcome to the November 2022 edition of Outbeat News in Depth. I'm Greg Morelia. Well, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday and are ready for all that lies ahead in December. But I know for many LGBTQ people, the holidays can be particularly isolating times, especially in today's world where it feels like there's such a backlash of oppression targeting LGBTQ people in the form of hate crimes and legislation across the country. Our first guest tonight is doing something about this feeling and has created a new website to support, in particular, closeted and isolated LGBTQ people in the South. Now, you might wonder why something like this is still needed in 2022, but believe me, it is. In the second half of our show, we'll talk with our own Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer about just how to survive the holidays as an LGBTQ person. So stay with us. It's all coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, November 27th, 2022. I'd love to change the world,
but I don't know what to do. This is Greg Morelia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of November 27th, 2022. This Thursday, December 1st, is World AIDS Day. And this year's theme is Putting Ourselves to the Test, Achieving Equity to End HIV. In 1998, World AIDS Day was designated on December 1st of every year to raise awareness of the AIDS pandemic caused by the spread of HIV infection and to mourn those who have died from the disease. According to UNAIDS, 38.4 million people worldwide are living with HIV. 1.5 million new people became infected in 2021, and 650,000 people died from AIDS-related illnesses last year. Of the 38-plus million people living with HIV, only 28.7 million are accessing antiretroviral treatment. In all, 84.2 million people have become infected with HIV since the beginning of the epidemic in 1981. Here in the U.S., California, Texas, Florida, Georgia, New York, Illinois, North Carolina, Ohio, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania all lead the nation in the number of new HIV infections reported. Black and African American identified people have the highest rate of new infection, followed by Hispanic, Latino, and Caucasians. Those ages 20 to 39 were among those with the highest rates of new infection. One of the best ways of stopping the spread of HIV is for everyone to get tested. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommends everyone over the age of 13 get an HIV test at least once. Here in Sonoma County, testing is available for free from face-to-face. They're located at 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. You can even get a test to take home and test in the privacy of your own space. Learn more about all of that at ftf.org. And you can help spread awareness about HIV and the importance of being tested by wearing a red ribbon this Thursday. Better yet, you can help contribute to Food for Thought here in Sonoma County by participating in this year's Dining Out for Life event. A group of great restaurants from all over Sonoma County are participating, and all you need to do is go out and enjoy a meal at one of these generous eating establishments. A portion of the proceeds from the day will go to Food for Thought here in Sonoma County. You can find a list of participating restaurants by searching Dining Out for Life Sonoma County on the internet. And in just over 2 weeks, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus will perform their holiday concert at the Green Center at Sonoma State University, all in support of face-to-face here in Santa Rosa. It's always a great concert filled with laughter and great music. And best of all, the proceeds go to supporting things like free HIV testing and services supporting those who are living with HIV. You can learn more and get tickets at ftf.org. And last Sunday was this year's Transgender Day of Remembrance. In 2013, the FBI began tracking hate crimes against transgender people. This year, ahead of Transgender Day of Remembrance, the Human Rights Campaign shared that at least 32 transgender and gender nonconforming people have been killed so far in the United States. The Human Rights Campaign also noted that since the FBI began tracking acts of violence, there have been a total of 302 violent deaths of gender nonconforming and transgender people. According to its annual report, in 2022, transgender people of color make up 81% of the identified victims, with 59% of them being black. Trans women are killed at a much higher rate, with them making up 63% of all documented victims since 2013. The report also revealed that 15 transgender people have been killed by police or when they were in custody in prisons or jails. Two of these deaths occurred just this year. Other victims were killed by someone they knew, and almost one-fifth of those whose killer was identified turned out to be an intimate partner. Last year, the Human Rights Campaign recorded its highest total of deadly violence against transgender and gender nonconforming people, with a final total being 57 victims. Here in California, the Department of Justice reported that 45 transgender or gender nonconforming victims reported being victim of a hate crime in the state in 2021. This number was up sharply from the previous year, 2020. The Transgender Day of Remembrance serves as an international observance of those who have lost their lives due to anti-transgender violence.
If you have a local LGBTQ news story, announcement, or an event you'd like to share with our listeners in this segment, tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatnews.com. Just click the Submit Event button at the top of the page. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia. But I don't know what to do. Our first guest tonight is a young man who experienced anti-LGBTQ oppression firsthand while growing up in Knoxville, Tennessee. Colin Conrad said from a young age he described himself as the odd man out and the one who trusted no one. He's an adult now, and he's created a new website called Publicly Private. It's a place LGBTQ plus people can find refuge, community, and access a chosen family. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Excited to have you and to hear about this new organization that you've started. It is the holiday time, so we're talking about, you know, how do LGBT people survive the holidays. And so I'm curious to hear a lot about your organization and some of your ideas about that. But before we get to it, tell us about you, your background, and what drew you to this type of activism.
All right. So I'm Colin Conrad. I'm the founder and executive director for Publicly Private. Basically, my personal journey brought me to what is Publicly Private today. I put in all my needs for being a gay man into this nonprofit that we just launched in June, and we're excited to have our resources up and available for the Southern community in the United States.
So you talked about the South. Is that where you grew up?
Yes, I grew up in the Tennessee Knoxville area.
Wow, that must have been a little bit challenging. I mean, I think about the struggles that kids have here in California being gay, but I can't imagine doing that in Tennessee. What was that like?
It was extremely isolating, and I just compartmentalized my homosexuality until I was about 23, when I really realized and revisited all the traumas of the past, of it all. I was sexually assaulted in middle school, and I was extremely bullied. So I pretty much suppressed it all until I was 23, when I was able to finally, you know, move away. And I was in LA for a little bit of time, and I was comfortable with myself and able to release that and move forward.
Now, you know, obviously a lot of kids get bullied because they're thought to be gay. Were you out to your peers, or were you just perceived to be and victimized because of that?
I was victimized and perceived to be, yeah. I was very much so into the performing arts, so I danced competitively growing up, and that kind of put an additional target on my back.
Mm-hmm. And at what age did you decide to come out?
I came out at 19, but that was only to my immediate family. I kind of just didn't really come out to everybody else. I just kind of let people figure it out until I publicly disclosed it, I guess, like on Instagram. And I was 23 at the time.
And how did that go over with your folks and family?
They were all pretty accepting. A few made mistakes, obviously, as they were trying to process what would happen, because they perceived me to be this certain way for the longest time, and I had obviously denied it, and they had defended me over the years for it from the bullies, but they kind of perceived it in their own ways and they processed it. But I am grateful to have a family that loves and accepts me.
That's awesome. Very, very good. Well, let's get talking about Publicly Private. Obviously you had a lot of life experience that you could draw from. Is that what motivated you to create the organization?
It had been an idea of mine for a few years before I actually conceptualized the name. I knew that I've always wanted to help people. I used to volunteer with children with autism growing up, all throughout my youth years into my adult years. And I knew that this was something that was definitely needed in the South. There aren't a lot of programs that reach to that area, and with the queer population booming there. But around the time, my life kind of started to circle back around. It was the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. I was pursuing two different careers. Both careers kind of came to a halt. So I was forced to sit with myself for a little bit.
Mm.
And in that isolation again, and in that depressive state, I was able to conceptualize what publicly private was and finally came up with a name, and then started working on it for about a year and a half before we went public with it.
Awesome. So tell us about it. What is publicly private all about?
Right. So publicly private is a discrete resource center for the LGBTQIA+. Right now we're focused completely on Tennessee as we wait to expand our resources as we collect more funding. We have three main resource programs. We have Explore, Venture, and Strengthen. Explore is information and awareness resources where individuals can go and kind of see culture, history, health topics for the LGBTQIA+ community and share their stories. And then we have Venture, which our three key points in there are protect, prevent, and examine. So we have protection or prophylactics that we ship directly to participants' homes, so that way they can practice safe sex. We have Prevent, which is PrEP services. So it comes with an intro kit into PrEP. So you do all the testing at your house, you ship it back in. The kit includes a telehealth visit with a medical professional, and they will connect you up with PrEP services. And then the last one is Examine. We have two kits there. We have a 5-STD panel and a 3-site chlamydia gonorrhea, so everyone can just make sure that they're up to date with their STD and STI screenings, all from the comfort of their own homes. So there's no discrimination. And the final resource that we offer at the moment is Strengthen. Those are online group therapy sessions. We have youth, LGBTQIA+ adults, and parents of LGBTQIA+. The parents one kind of revolves around my story with my family not really knowing how to support me and affirm me at the time. So I put that class in there in kind of honor of them, but it's just limited participants in Strengthen. And we allow a counselor to kind of take everyone through icebreakers and just get to know, and a place to affirm their identity and discuss topics or situations that they might be going through.
Wow. And I've just been listening to you describe this to me, and what comes to mind is a virtual Pride Center.
Basically. Yeah. It's basically, the pandemic also kind of taught us all, I think, that we can do a lot more from virtual locations than we ever thought mm-hmm. we could. And you see how everybody now has a smartphone. So enacting on that and making it more accessible, I think this is the way of the future, I would like to hope.
So it's kind of interesting. I'm sure you've probably discovered this being in LA. I think we take for granted the services that are available to us. So you mentioned HIV testing and STI testing. Well, there's several clinics, several places you can go here in the North Bay and get that for free. Certainly, it's very accessible through your medical provider. And I'm sure you found the same in LA, but it's hard to imagine that there are many places in this country, and I'm guessing Tennessee is one of them, where those services are just not readily available. Is that true?
Yes, it's 100% true. And the legal laws there actually allow for discrimination based on care. So gender dysphoria, they are now allowed to discriminate based on the provider's religion in Tennessee. And there's so much discrimination that one can see when trying to seek services, and definitely with legislation that allows for it in the Southern United States, I can see why their mental health is a little bit less off than ours and here in LA, and their sexual health needs support. I wouldn't want to walk into a doctor not knowing if I'm able to, you know, be tested or seek treatment for the day. So that's where publicly private falls in. And hopefully where our goal is to fill those gaps pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's insulting on so many levels to walk in when you need care, right? You're not feeling well. And the doctor imagining having a doctor say, well, I can't treat you because my religion doesn't agree with who you are. Or I don't approve of who you are. And so get out. That's unconscionable to me, but you're right. It does happen around this country, and that's sad.
Absolutely.
I think I read about the concept or the idea of a chosen family first from Armistead Maupin in some of his writings.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly other people have written about a chosen family, but talk about it from your perspective. What is a chosen family, and how does that differ from your biological family?
Right. So a chosen family, I would say they're not necessarily biologically related to you. However, they provide support and structure like no other. It can mean, you know, you feel most comfortable around these people. And they can mirror the structure of like a heterosexual's typical family. I think Pose on Netflix does a really great job of kind of taking us back to that time mm-hmm. when New York was at its height of the HIV pandemic, and you had all these queer people fleeing their hometowns in order to find refuge there in large cities. And to see that they were forming these houses where they all supported each other, that is really what a chosen family is. It's someone that you feel comfortable around. I know that when I first came to Los Angeles, I found my chosen family in my workplace. It was, you know, they started calling me gay and I wasn't out yet. None of them knew that I wasn't out yet back home, but they just started calling me gay, and it wasn't, you know, derogatory. It wasn't negative. It was of an accepting way. And they were also queer individuals themselves. So it just made it so much more comfortable. And that's what I would consider a chosen family to be.
Mm-hmm. Pose is a great example of that. I absolutely agree with you. I can't imagine that there were gayborhoods, if you will, in Tennessee. When you came to LA, what was it like for you to discover West Hollywood for the first time?
West Hollywood was an experience. I remember I was kind of uncomfortable to go there at first, because when you're, you know, so new to coming out and figuring out who you are, it's kind of like loud and in your face, I would say West Hollywood is. And now it's definitely changed. I would say that West Hollywood is a little bit more commercialized than it used to be. Mm-hmm. We've definitely lost a little bit of the, not diversity, I would say, but just more individuals go there, because I think gay neighborhoods are great at harboring safe places for people to explore themselves. And I think gay individuals, we really kind of know how to party. We know how to make a fun time. So, and the commercialization of it with RuPaul's Drag Race and everything has just made those neighborhoods pop culture phenomenons.
Yeah, I mean, when I think back into the 1970s, when gayborhoods were popping up, right? The Castro, Greenwich Village had certainly been there a while, West Hollywood, Boys Town, all of those places were magnet locations, right? People read about them, and they were drawn from all of the corners of the United States, places like Tennessee. And they provided a sense of safety, political power centers. A lot was able to happen in those places, and they're kind of fading away today. What are we going to lose if they disappear?
I don't know. I don't know necessarily that, you know, I don't think we're going to lose anything. I would say, you know, the most recent Gallup polls, 71% of Americans are for same-sex marriage, as opposed to 1996, 27%. Mm-hmm. While legislation and the tax on the LGBTQIA+ community don't feel like we're progressing as much as we should, I think a lot of people's viewpoints are changing. Now, when you take that and you go into the South, yes, it's a different situation, but the South also has the largest population of LGBTQIA+. So we should take that power and we should take it to the polls, and we should vote, and we should make changes in the structure of our government in order to make sure that we're all protected throughout the United States.
Yeah. And so how do we get people to vote? I mean, we saw in 2016 what happens when half the registered voters decide not to participate.
I think it's just awareness and encouraging them and knowing everybody has a right to vote, and you cannot be discriminated against at the polls. So, and knowing that your voice needs to be heard. If you, you know, are of the LGBTQIA+ community, it's ever so important that you get out and vote.
I totally agree. Well, you work with youth and certainly had your own experience coming out, as we all did. I think one of the things that's interesting about being a gay person in terms of being a minority, especially in a family, is that you don't share typically that same minority identity with your parents. You know, if you're an African-American kid, you know, at least one of your parents is partially at least African-American, and you can share that affinity identity with your parent. But as a gay kid, you can't. You're sort of on your own. Talk about the importance of finding a community and a network to support you.
I totally agree with you on that. Our minority is definitely not always visible. But if you see that, affirmation plays a huge role in the mental health of the LGBTQIA+ if affirmed, you see the potential damaging effects like suicide drop by several percent. So it's critical that, you know, the LGBTQIA plus find people to support them, because fighting the battle alone is nearly impossible. So I would say there's a lot of online forums now that a lot of nonprofits have created, not just publicly private, but the Trevor Project and others, PFLAG. They have resources there where you can kind of find a community of LGBTQIA+. There's this really awesome coffee shop. It's owned by a transgender woman that popped up in Knoxville. And she's doing a fantastic job creating community and a safe place for all the queer individuals there in that community. So the expansion of the queer community is there. And we also have the power of social media. And you can definitely find your home and your people through these new avenues that everyone is discovering.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the avenues you think for a young person might be the best? Do you have a sense of good ones other than your own organization?
Other than my organization? Yeah, PFLAG actually has tons of flagship locations. I think they have about 300 around the U.S. So the likelihood that one is close to someone is very possible. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're old enough, I would say that most neighborhoods, most areas in the United States do have a local gay bar. And that is a really great place to kind of network and connect and find people that are along the same lines of your identity.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, maybe bars have a negative connotation to them, but you don't have to drink alcohol. You have to certainly be of age to go there, but you don't have to drink alcohol there to participate in the community, right? It's that space. And there is something that is markedly different being face-to-face versus using a dating app like Grindr or Growler or Scruff or any of those others.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I think the holiday, go ahead.
No, and the bars like played such a pivotal role. You know, if you look throughout the history, like the gayborhoods and stuff all centered around that one crucial gay bar to the community where everyone could go and connect and meet each other and feel open and free. Yeah. So they have such a positive light for our community.
I think so. I definitely think so. Well, the holidays can be a particularly rough time for folks. It's not, at least in my mind, the best time to come out if you're a young person and you're thinking about coming out to your family. But what are your views about that? Is the Thanksgiving dinner table a great time?
I would say know your timing, know the setting, and prepare for the outcomes. But you should never feel ashamed of sharing parts of yourself. Coming out is one of the steps in order to free yourself. And you are so brave for wanting to take that step. The holidays are hard and very stressful. You're seeing relatives that you don't really normally see often, or just like everyone. I know it's the last, at least in my family, everyone puts a pressure on themselves to like get the perfect gift, or just everyone to have fun. Everybody just wants everyone to have fun so bad that it kind of creates tension, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So I would just say, know your timing, know your setting, and prepare for the outcomes. I heard this really crazy story of, it was Christmas, and the LGBTQIA plus center in New York, they're actually open all holidays just because of this, because these one kids, they came out on the holidays and they were shunned by their parents, and they took a bus to New York and arrived on New Year's Eve. And luckily the center was there to embrace them and welcome them in. But we can hope that the people that do come out don't have that negative outcome, but I would say definitely prepare for both outcomes in that situation.
Yeah, I agree. Having a plan is super important, because especially if you're going to take a chance of coming out in the holidays, if it doesn't go well, then I don't know, I guess the cynic side of me says that parents would blame you for ruining Thanksgiving for the rest of their lives.
Oh yeah. I lose my words when I try to think about it, but it's just so saddening to me that how a parent could shun their kid for wanting to live their true life. It's just, I just don't consider them parents. I don't want to label them that.
Yeah, it feels like abuse to me, frankly.
Yeah, it's 100% abuse, I would say. But hopefully, you know, one day in the future, we can get to a point, if we all just keep advocating and working towards the progression of the community, we can get to a point where, you know, we have plenty of resources to gather up the ones that are neglected and help them to the future.
There's also an older generation, though, too. who maybe is used more used to being alone. You know, before marriage was a thought, I think there was this idea that or expectation that if you were a gay person that you would be living your life in sort of a solitary situation. And the holidays can be particularly difficult times to be alone. Give some advice to those folks who have maybe been in a rut with Thanksgiving and, you know, Christmas and Hanukkah and everything coming up. If you're alone, what should you do? How can you make things better this year?
I would say that, you know, the conversation about the holidays can start now within your community or within your trusted friends and engage in that conversation about the holidays. And gratefully, during that time, people are very generous. So I think friends will be willing to spend time with you. And the first steps would be to express your interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe taking initiative to reach out and, you know, create an event, create something. If you can't be with your family, then create an event for your, as you say, chosen family and bring people into your house or bring people into your space. You don't have to live alone.
I've been here in Los Angeles 10 years now, and I never been back for Thanksgiving, but every year I'm lucky enough to be invited to things, even with it's with whether it's with colleagues or whether it's with close friends. So I think, you know, the generosity does expand. And even my first year out here, I was invited to so many Thanksgiving parties. I think, yeah, like I said, the generosity is fantastic around that time of year. And you definitely should approach the conversation and, you know, figure out a plan for yourself. So that way you're not sitting alone and you're not harboring on those feelings from the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously you're seeing a lot of examples with people using your services of various mental health challenges. To what degree are those associated with having an unsupportive family or a disconnected family?
It is 100% supported to that. I mean, the Trevor Project did this really great survey this past year, and where it showed that affirmation in schools and affirmation at home really, really impacted the suicide rate or the potential for suicide and mental health of the LGBTQIA plus youth exponentially. It would drop by like 2 to 5%, depending on the subject. So affirmation is such a key role. It's whether, you know, it's he, him, his, they, them, she, her. Understanding the pronouns and creating a safe space in the classroom and at home to discuss this orientation as you develop.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I have to imagine that all of the anti-LGBT legislation has taken a toll on folks. I've certainly heard that. Talk about what you've heard and seen with how transgender people in particular are being impacted by a lack of family support and all of this anti-LGBT legislation that's happening.
Of course. Yeah. Since 2018, well, nearly, you know, 670 anti-LGBTQIA plus bills have been filed. And this year it was approximately 240. And half of these bills target the transgender population.
Incredible.
So if you look at, you know, the inability to receive PrEP services based on religious beliefs in Texas now, taking away the Affordable Care Act, or the gender dysphoria, which is completely disheartening, where they can't receive the psychological help that they need in order to proceed hormone treatment, hormone therapy, or help them heal with their trauma. It is even, you see also the most targeted and discriminated group would be the transgender people. And nearly 1 in 5 transgender and 9 non-binary youth attempted suicide in the past year.
Yeah, so those are pretty frightening numbers.
And so, you know, suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people. And if you're LGBTQIA plus, you're 4 times more likely to strongly consider suicide.
Yeah. Well, I know you're based in Tennessee and that's the target audience, but your website is accessible worldwide. Where can people go to learn more about publicly private?
It's so our website is publiclyprivate.org, publiclyprivate.org. And we do have like an open area of our website. And we also have our website that's called Private Side because it's geared towards keeping and harboring a safe space for the LGBTQIA+. So everything on there you have to access through completing our risk analysis to make sure that we don't filter in any hate.
And are people outside of the Knoxville, Tennessee area, or Tennessee as a state, able to access that area? Can they apply and partake?
Yeah, at the moment, we only restrict our sexual health resources. So they can partake in the Strengthen, they can partake in the Explore, they can use the community there to really uplift themselves and empower and figure out what's going on with publicly private. Hopefully, our goal is to have enough funding in order to expand to the whole Southern United States by the end of the year for the sexual health resources. So we'll be shipping testing kits and prophylactics to participants' homes throughout the Southern United States because it's definitely needed. We just wanted to make sure that we could focus on the Tennessee area first, as it is one of the top least, the University of Tennessee actually was just voted second most unfriendly LGBTQIA+ university in the nation. So there's a lot of work to be done there. So I'm hoping that we are able to expand quickly as possible to get care and help where it's needed.
Great. Well, if you missed that website, publiclyprivate.org, we'll have a link on our own website at outbeatnews.com. You can just click on show notes at the top of the page, and you'll be able to get to these valuable resources. Colin Conrad, congratulations to you on taking the initiative to make life better for folks in Tennessee and the greater United States. I mean, we just don't have enough resources available, and so the more options people have, I think the better off we're going to be.
Yes, Greg. Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat News in Depth here on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Moralia. Well, as you just heard, we were talking about how difficult the holidays can be for LGBT people. I mean, is it the right time to come out? What about bringing that new special someone to a family event? And is this the right year to travel since the pandemic is now over with? And what if you're alone and find the holidays, well, just depressing? What can you do differently this year? Well, you all know Sheridan Gold and her wife, Dr. Diana Greyer. They host Living Proof here on Outbeat Radio, and I've asked them to join me tonight to talk about some practical strategies for how to survive the holidays. Sheridan and Di, welcome to the show. Well, Sheridan and Diana, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey.
I don't get a chance to say that very often.
Right. We're happy to be guests on your show, Greg.
I am excited to have you as guests on this show. Like I said, we just don't get a chance to do that often enough. We certainly worked a lot together, but not had you on this show. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yay. It's different. You being the interviewer versus our engineer working in the background.
Yeah. Yeah, no, good. And of course, I always hold you two responsible for getting me into this because it was an interview I did back with you two and my husband, Tony, in 2009 that started this whole radio adventure. That's a long time ago.
Long time ago. When you said that, I was like, wow, that was a long time ago.
Yep.
And Greg, you're just exceptional. So you got it all down.
So. Well, you two as well. We make a good team. So, hey, so we talked with Colin Conrad on the first part of the show about the work he's doing to support LGBTQ people with this new website. But I wanted to talk more practically about strategies for LGBT people now that we're approaching the holiday season. I mean, we've survived Thanksgiving, perhaps. We're rolling into the Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa time, New Year's. And I'm just thinking about this political environment that is so divisive right now. I'm thinking about all of the anti-LGBTQ legislation that's happening, particularly the attack on transgender people that's going on. What are you two hearing? I mean, you talk to a lot of people locally here. You have folks on your show, and you're very connected in the community. What are you hearing from people about the struggles they're facing in light of all of this oppression as they kind of look at the holidays? Do they dread them?
Well, what I'm hearing, Greg, from the young people that I talk with is that some of them, you know, I'm really surprised, though, that some young people are not really out to their families.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, because there is a trend that a lot of young people are owning who they are in schools, especially in the high school levels and stuff like that. But I know some young women, young trans, not trans, non-binary people who are really struggling to share themselves with their families. And so, you know, I'm surprised pretty much about that myself. Sherry, have you?
Yeah, because when I see folks, young folks, especially out in the community, they seem so secure and presenting themselves as however they want the world to see them. And then as we get to know them a little more deeply, we find out that they're very upset inside. They're very, what's the word? Like a tug of war is going on inside them, and they don't know whether they should come out to their families. And so there's this, they're highly anxious, even though they present as being together. So I think that young people especially are very cautious. That's what we're hearing. And the struggle, you ask, are they struggling with being accepted by their family? Yes, they're struggling. And the struggle, in my opinion, is whether or not to be authentic.
Right.
Do they show their authentic selves to their family members who probably won't understand? And are they too tired to educate? Do they not want to educate? Like, it's your, you go out and get your education and then come back and talk to me. I feel like a lot of the young folks don't have a lot of tolerance for helping us older folks understand. So there's that struggle.
And so, yeah. And so there's another situation too, that I'm involved in with the church. I know a young person, high school person, who's struggling, was able to come out to family, and family is accepting. But there's that split where parents don't want the kid to talk about it with the church. But if you're sitting in church and you're hearing the pastor talk about how negative it is to be LGBTQ plus or trans, that type of thing, and you're sitting there. So I've been having this conversation back and forth, like, what do you do? How do you show up? And this situation is causing this person a lot of anxiety and stress, because they want to stand up, but it's like the consequences they're looking at, Greg, the consequences of if people finding out in the community, what's going to happen with her siblings, what's going to happen with parents at the church. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right about kids living two lives. At school, they're out, perhaps they're being authentic with their friends, but at home they can't. I know I hear a lot from my LGBT students who are taking an LGBT studies class, and these are college age students, and they dread the idea of having to tell their parents or their parents finding out. And the real practical threat to them is being kicked out of the house. You know, their parents are providing a roof and food, but these kids are over 18, and so parents can easily kick them out. And we know even in some cases, parents will kick their kids out, you know, when they're younger than that. Are you hearing anything from, let's just say, the older generations, the Gen Y, Gen X, whatever comes before that? Are people still struggling with being at home for the holidays around family? Are they still being rejected, or have folks found their way to be integrated back into families?
To be honest with you, I don't have those kinds of conversations with older folks, like maybe our age or maybe in their, like we're in our 60s. So anyone who's in their, let's say, 30s or 40s, I don't really have conversations with people in that age group. But what I would venture to say is that the ego is a little more developed. And I think people who are older than maybe your students and the students that we've been working with, the younger students, I think that they would have their backup plans. I'm hoping they would have their backup plans in place. And that's one of our overarching pieces of advice, I guess, to anyone who's struggling about wanting to go home, wanting to keep the connections, no matter what age you are, is to always have a support system, always have a backup plan in case things go sideways.
Yeah. So let's get to that advice. It's holiday time. Maybe college kids are thinking about going home. They've maybe come out in their college years, or maybe it's someone in their mid-20s or 30s who's come out, but they're going to travel back to the holidays. Is Christmas Day, over Christmas dinner, the time to make the big announcement to an entire family?
I know, Greg. It seemed like we've had this conversation before. I've had this conversation with different people, and different people have different opinions. And sure, you might have a different opinion. I think, you know, it's about the security of the individual. I don't believe that I'm going to go to Christmas and just say, hey, I am lesbian or I am non-binary or whatever that is. No, it's not going to be done that way. I'm going to want to have a conversation, maybe a private conversation, to see how that is. If my goal is to be authentic and to be real and to show up as myself, I would like, you know, step-by-step plan. Okay, let me see who in the family I can trust.
Mm-hmm.
Who is there one person, you know, maybe it's not my two aunts, you know, beyond, you know what I mean? It's like, who can I trust? So that I would go that route first and then see how that feels. And then go to the next person, you know, an aunt or an uncle or a cousin, maybe somebody my same age. How do you think about if I tell mom or dad this or something, a sibling, you know, start small and then go big. But you have to feel comfortable, you know.
You have to feel comfortable for sure. And you have to be smart, because if you don't feel the safety that Diana's talking about, things could, I mean, you're very vulnerable if you're in a big group and you want to talk to a big group and it's just you. I would say that's not the best way to go. I would say that you want to be smart and you want to be safe first and foremost. There's something also that you could do, a person could do, which would be call ahead and have conversations with people. Maybe the host, maybe it's your mother who's hosting the big family gathering, and talk to your mom and just, you know, how people say test the temperature. Just see how she's feeling about things. And if she's saying, oh, no, don't bring that here, then you, the person, would have to make a decision. Is it worth going back home and being your unauthentic self? And is it better for you in your own safety and your own personhood to stay home and be nurtured and safe with the people that you've chosen for your family? Those are very individual choices, and nobody can tell anybody what to do. We can only have suggestions, like if you decide to go home, always have a backup plan. What happens? Are you spending the night there? I would say, and I think Di would agree with me, get a motel room. Get somewhere else that you can go to give yourself some respite from a very volatile situation, if that's what's going to happen. I also want to applaud people who want to keep the bridges, you know, intact and always, you know, be available for your family in case they want to make gestures to approach you and stuff, because it's too easy to close the door. Like, nope, you don't accept me. F you. I'm gone. I'm doing my life and I don't ever want to see you again. That's very easy. And I think maybe a lot of us have had those moments, especially when we were younger, to close the door. And I think as we evolve, we realize that it's the only family we have, really. And how much do we want to sacrifice to continue to be in relationship with our family members?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on the other side of that is also the people who really want to be in relationship with their family, but they go to those holiday events and they don't express themselves. And so a lot of sadness, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety as a result of them, you know, not being able to be authentic and real. And I think we need to pay attention to that, because that can happen if you decide that it's not a safe environment and that you want to go home. And how do you deal with those emotions, you know, of not being able to express yourself and to sit around the table and just be a fake or a phony and not liking that part of yourself?
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to really be gentle and just say it's just not the right time now. And we'll just keep working on that, building that relationship. Yeah.
I just think the holidays are so stressful for people. We impose, you know, so much stress on ourselves by trying to create the perfect evening or the perfect dinner. And, you know, I have this nightmarish vision of somebody coming out, let's say they're coming out as transgender, and forever for the rest of the family's time together, they get blamed for ruining Christmas, right, with this big announcement. And I like what you said about, you know, having those conversations individually and having them ahead of time so that you can gauge how safe it's going to be for everybody. And then having that backup plan. Love the idea of getting a hotel room, because no one wants to go traveling out to some places, you know, when it's cold and snowy out and having to be stuck in a house that they're not wanted in.
Right. Right. Exactly. And if a person doesn't have a backup plan like that, then I think it's smart not to go, because you need a place to retreat to. You need a place for respite. You need a place of safety.
Yeah.
And that's what hopefully that we are creating for ourselves here in our home where we live now, away from our families, that we can go back to. And so creating that little cave for yourself when you are away traveling, and putting the idea of, oh, it's so expensive, just putting that away, because there's no amount of money that can be given to protect your mental health. Mm-hmm. Your mental health has no price on it. And if it's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks to get a motel room, you are worth it.
Yeah, I agree. What about this idea of bringing your significant other home for the first time and introducing that person as also your way of coming out? Just doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
When you say for the first time, do you mean you're coming out for the first time and you're bringing your romantic interest? Yeah, I think that's a
double
failure.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
And it really feels like we're putting this person that we care about in harm's way as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's not fair.
Yeah, I've heard of many situations like that, though, where it's a friend. This is my friend, but family members know that it's not your friend, you know, but people try and cover up. But yeah, you want to be safe again, you know, start slow. I know you want your family to meet your significant other, but I would take it really slowly and be clear. You know, just in case there's some backlash, have your safety plan in place and be ready, you know.
And that's the thing that I think is missing out of this conversation, and sometimes missing out of somebody's view. They want to come out and they want to introduce their love interest to their family. And if you don't like it, F you, and I'm out of here. And the person who has that viewpoint, you know, the LGBTQI plus person, has had years to integrate this thing about themselves, have had years to understand that they aren't what their family thinks they are. And so to just pop that out in one day, in one sentence, and expect people to not have any reaction is very unrealistic. So just to be patient with those who you want to share this beautiful thing about your life, have patience and be smart about it.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, be patient. And some people don't want to be patient. And so there's a lot of fallout as a result of that. And so I think the big word is being patient. That, like, I love what you said, Cher, about the LGBT person or the trans person or non-binary person has been holding on to this. Mm-hmm. And they know this about themselves. So, you know, give your relatives, your grandparents, your, you know, parents some time to incorporate it all.
Yeah,
especially the older folks. I mean, like, let's say grandparents. You just mentioned grandparents, Diana. I mean, let's just say your grandparents are in your 60s through your 80s, let's just say, or 90s. That is going to take a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Ingestion, just like turning, because non-binary people, for example, don't want to be referred to as he or she and are highly offended if you don't remember to call them they. And they is really super hard for older folks because it's not, quote unquote, grammatically correct. And so there's that struggle with the language versus what your niece or nephew or grandchild wants you to call them. And it's very, very tough. And so that's why we're asking to have patience for the person to have patience with their relatives.
Yeah. It's hard for people like me who's wise and aware. And it's like, oh, they. You know, it's like I want to say she or he.
But we're so conditioned. Training.
We have to, we have to learn that practice is a practice. It's a practice. Yeah. So patience.
So let's talk about the folks who decide not to go home. You're alone again, you know, another holiday season. I know for some folks I've talked to that the holidays really are, they dread, because they are times where people find themselves very isolated and in solitude. And with COVID, we've all had to face that to one degree or another the last couple of years. So now that's somewhat relieved. There's a chance to go out and be with people again. What's your advice for folks who find themselves alone to shift and change this year to get past this feeling isolated?
Yeah. To be, when you're feeling alone, I mean, that's sad in itself. I would work on support system. Who are the people around you that you can talk to and hang out with and play games with and be with and not try and be isolated? Cher and I, we would volunteer, go to food banks. We volunteer and we hand out food at food distribution places. They, LGBTQ plus trans, they have groups, Trans Life, they have different groups in the community, Sonoma County Pride, they have a calendar of events. There's always something going on in the community where people can find activities to be involved in.
I think it takes a lot of strength on a person, inner strength, who's lonely, who's alone. I mean, there's the choice. You can sit in your apartment or your house and be alone and be lonely, or you can go out and look for the resources Diana just talked about. Look for places where you can volunteer. Look for places where people are worse off, quote unquote, than you are, and go help somebody. Go help them feel good. And when you help somebody feel good, you know what? It is reciprocated and you feel good yourself. I'm sorry, but that is just the law of nature. When you help somebody, you're helping yourself. And so I really, really applaud what Di said. And I really encourage people to go out and find a place for themselves instead of wallowing in sorrow, which it's a choice. So,
yep. It's about searching for that chosen family, right? If you're not able to access your biological family for whatever reason, they've all passed on, you've been rejected, whatever it happens to be, it's going out and finding a chosen family. Armistead Maupin wrote about that, as have others, but I really like that idea that we're not bound to be connected just to those we're biologically connected with.
Exactly. That's what we've done for years. We don't have family members that we hang out with. All of our families is the family that we've chosen over the years. It's been consistent for a long time for holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas. What other ones we celebrate?
So what's your favorite tradition with your chosen family? What's the favorite thing you like to do?
Well, recently, because I'm Jewish, you know, having Passover is a holiday. And having people come over and enjoy sharing myself, really sharing myself. It's been hard. It's been a struggle. It's like, oh, nobody would be interested. And all of a sudden, we do Passover together and our friends, we invite them over and they're like, wow, this is so cool. And that's the thing about it. If you don't open yourself up, you'll never know what people think. You'll never know how you'll be accepted. So that's another idea, is you could host a dinner yourself and invite your friends over.
That's a good idea. Yeah. And Thanksgiving, we've been hanging with this group for over 25 years, maybe. And we love sitting around. We like to, like Thanksgiving, we love just appreciating, sharing our gratitudes with each other. Cher would play her flute to open up this talk, the sharing, which is very powerful. And we just eat good food and we just have deep conversations around the table, that kind of thing. And then we start playing games afterwards, silly games, and we just laugh and have a good time. And I encourage people to just find people who are positive mirrors for you, who when you look at them, you see your specialness, and that's what's important. And there are people out there like you, who who are looking for people like you. You know what I mean? It's like,
I like that, Don.
It's amazing how it is.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to, like Cher say, you just have some courage, you know, and take a risk and reach out and you'll be surprised. So.
No reason to be alone this holiday season if you don't want to be.
No. That's correct.
Awesome. We've got just a couple minutes left here. Your show is coming up next week. So what's on tap?
Well, we have a very special show because we are celebrating
our
45th anniversary.
45 years. Holy cow, you two.
Right.
So congratulations.
So we're going to talk. We decided we haven't had a radio show just for us in a while. So we're just going to just kind of reminisce over some years and maybe play music in between, you know, some special songs. Maybe Cher play some Jewish songs and I play some of my mom's favorite Christmas songs that she used to play all the time. And just kind of just have fun with that show, Greg. And we haven't done that in a while. So we thought 45 years would be a good time to have fun with it, right?
Yep, that's right. I can't believe it, though. We met in 1976 at San Francisco State.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, we have friends who weren't even born then. I mean, it's just really crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be with someone and not be bored and to continue to have the love grow and all, it's just really, it's, I feel very grateful. So that's what we're going to be talking about next week.
We're still having fun, Greg.
That's what's most important. You could do a whole show just on all your tips and strategies for maintaining a relationship over 45 years.
Oh, that's right. Would be good, too. We add some of that in there, too. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, why not? That's a good idea, Greg. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, congratulations to you both on that. Thanks for hanging out with me for a little bit tonight. And, you know, have a great holiday season coming up.
Thank you. You and Tony too. As well.
Yeah.
We're planning on it.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Greg.
And that wraps up our hour. Be sure to tune in next Sunday night for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. They'll be celebrating their 45th wedding anniversary, as you heard. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on 104.9 KRCB-FM, Sonoma County's NPR station. In the meantime, do have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia. Our shows are available for on-demand play anytime on our website at outbeatnews.com and on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now on iHeartRadio. Find links to subscribe at outbeatnews.com.
I love to change the world, but I don't know what to. So I give it up to you. You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.